This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get back to the draft after the first round last night, plus preview what's next in the NBA playoffs coming up. If you ever missed anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And find the show podcasted online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. While there, you can also leave a comment for the show. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Or join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. I'll give you all my takeaways from the draft coming up, plus we'll hear from Scott Fitterer. Now, I'll be honest. I was in and out of the draft, and I was following it on my phone, and I was watching some of the videos later on. It was one of those things, though, you get the gist of it, right, without even having to watch it, follow the picks. I was out to eat last night, went to a good spot. I have some had some family in town this week. Went out to eat last night. First time I think I've ever experienced this. You know, back in the day, you sit down at the table, they would always bring you bread. Then, in recent years, you'd have to ask for the bread. No problem. Right? If you're not going to ask for it, they're not going to bring it to you. I'm a big bread guy. I love my bread. Last night, the place we went, and we've been there before, it's a good spot. I'm not going to say the name. It's a good place. I'll go back. No problem. But last night, for bread, they were charging $7.
$7 for bread.
$7 for six pieces of bread.
Wow, look at that. Yep. So over $1 a slice.
That's right.
That's unbelievable, Luke.
I know. I thought so.
But this is a restaurant that in the past, that you know that they do bring bread.
They did. Now, we have not been there since, it's been a couple of years.
My family
was in town previously. It had been a while. Pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic.
I know, you know, restaurants took a beating during the pandemic, so I don't know if this was a move to try to make some money back. They can't be giving bread out for free anymore.
Sure.
They're going to be charging you. And if you're going to charge, okay, that's fine. How about like $3, right? $7 for bread. I got to have my bread before my meal and olive oil. And $7. Now, we got it anyways. We had to get the bread. But but I think that's the first time I've ever gone to a restaurant, and they charge you bread and charge you $7, right? If it's like $3, okay, that's one thing. All right, $3. But $7? Right, I could get calamari for the same price.
See, they knew that you were going to buy it regardless.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. I need my bread. Love it. And it was good. It was a good bread. It was a good meal. It's a good place. Good spot. It's a good Italian spot that we found that we go whenever my family's in town. I won't say the name because I don't want to throw them under the bus. But, man, $7 for bread. Crazy. I was following along on my phone while we were out to eat the draft and seeing the things that took place, unloading my takeaways once again from last night. When it comes to the Panthers and the Falcons, I thought both at least nailed the proper position. The Panthers got the offensive lineman that I thought they could use. The Falcons got a wide receiver, as they certainly could benefit from. Before we dive into all of my takes, let's first hear from Scott Fitterer, who spoke with the NFL Network afterwards about the pick. Here's what the Panthers GM had to say last night.
For the first time since 2008, the Panthers select an offensive tackle in the first round of the NFL draft. This year, it's Ikem Ekwonu, the guy from Charlotte, played up the road at NC State. What was it about Ikem that impressed you?
He came into the interview last week with us. We flew him in for a 30 interview. He was so impressive in the interview. Just every interview, every coach walked out and said, wow, this is a real guy. I did the interview with Mr. Tepper in our room, and after he got up and walked out, it was like, wow, this is who we want to be as a team. He was a leader, he's a tone setter, he's physical on tape, and he's got such an energy to him, so we're so excited to get him.
Yeah, Matt said that you guys went through 50 different scenarios this morning and didn't really have Ikem dropping to 6. When you're watching the draft and you see it all fold out, what are you thinking?
It was unreal. I think the turning point was 3 when Stingley went to Houston. So then we thought, okay, we're going to get one of these guys. Never would have thought Ikem. Wasn't sure Neil was even going to be there. And the fact that all 3 were on the board that never was a scenario that came up for us. So we got very lucky today, and we're much better off because of it.
What made you go with the offensive tackle instead of a quarterback with that first pick?
We just want to make the best football decision for the team. You know, obviously, we're looking at quarterbacks. However, this is the right football decision. It's something we've debated on, you know, over and over and over. And we didn't want to force it. We just want to say, hey, true to the board, best player. Let's just take that and walk away, and we're happy.
What put him above Evan Neal on your board?
You know what? I think they're both right there, and even Cross is in that mix. They were all a little bit different in their own way. It was just, I think, bringing Icky in and feeling that the leadership, the intensity, and the person, that's why we went with him. Couldn't have gone wrong with any of the other guys either.
I was at Icky's pro day, and a lot of the coaches there were telling me that he's the kind of guy that you can plug and play. He can make an immediate impact for an NFL team. Do you feel that? Do you think Brady Christensen starts at left tackle? How do you use both those guys?
Well, I think they're going to work them both at left tackle. Eventually, they'll make a decision, you know, does Brady go inside? Does, you know, the one thing we know about Icky, he's going to learn it quick. That transition should be quicker for him. And so however it works out, we're going to get our best five on the field.
That was Scott Fitterer after the draft last night. Now, unfortunately, as we found out when we played the audio, that it appeared it was in mono. So if you were listening on streaming, you may not have heard Scott Fitterer. Maybe you just had 2 minutes of dead air, awkward silence. And if that was the case, to summarize for you, he was happy that Icky fell into their lap at six. He thought the third overall pick was the swing pick, with Stingley going three. That bumped the guys back, allowing the Panthers to be able to get who they wanted. And when discussing that pick and saying, you know, going lineman over quarterback, they wanted to take the best player and make the best football decision and didn't want to force anything. And they decided on their board. I mean, we saw Kenny Pickett didn't go until 20th. So at the number six pick, get a talented lineman instead of trying to force a quarterback you could get, you know, somebody of that stature later in the round. If you're the Panthers, I like the pick last night, bringing in the offensive lineman, but it's half the battle. Now, go get a Baker Mayfield. Go get a Jimmy Garoppolo. Don't settle for Sam Darnold and think that just because you improve the offensive line, you know, the quarterback problem will be solved. That's not the case. For the Falcons, yesterday when I laid out the best course of action for these two teams for Atlanta, I said take a wide receiver. I did not say take this wide receiver, and we could all debate who the best wide receiver is in this draft class or who it will be, but at least the Falcons addressed that position by drafting Drake London. And some of the concerns with London are, you know, he's got good size, but does he have the speed? But I'll also say that we've seen plenty of wide receivers on the opposite end go in the first round because of their speed that did not work out. So I'm curious to see how London does with the Falcons moving forward. But I thought, with that eighth overall pick and this talented wide receiving class, get yourself one of those guys. Draft a wide receiver, and they did. You know, it's always tough to grade the draft the very next day, but you can grade at least what we believe. We can grade the thought process. You know, like Cole Strange may work out great for the Patriots, but it still doesn't seem smart to take him in the first round when he would have been available later on. We can judge how teams came about the decision-making. I don't know. I don't think I like that Cardinals trade last night, even without seeing what the draft pick turns out to be. I just don't think you got the right value. You gave up too much value for Marquise Brown. You can make determinations like that. For the Vikings, I'm a Vikings fan. I don't like trading with a division rival and allowing them to go get a talented wide receiver. When you drafted a safety at 32, you could have just stayed at 12 and get the number one safety. I don't know. We'll find out years from now if actually they found the right value. But on paper, I don't like that process. We'll see what the results are. So for the Falcons, for the Panthers, I like what they did. Both these guys, neither one of them may work out, but I like the thought process. Falcons needed a wide receiver. They got one. Panthers need an offensive lineman. They got one. I thought they were both good decisions. When I look at the draft last night, I think it indicates the direction in which the sport or the NFL is moving in. You know, the Rams show that draft picks are expendable. We've gotten to that point where more people in the league are starting to realize that. Before, draft picks used to be regarded as gold. Now, more teams are willing to move off of them. And so entering the draft, 25 of the first 82 picks were already traded, and then last night we set a record for 9 trades in the first round. More and more teams are willing to move around, give up some draft picks, especially if it's for a veteran player, and I like that. Draft picks can be important. Ask the Jets and the job they did last night as they try to build this roster. But depending on your situation, yeah, you should be willing to give up draft picks as well if you're getting something good back in return, or be willing to move. Move around. Move out of the first round. Move back. Give up a first-round pick for a Pro Bowl wide receiver, whatever it is. Be willing to use those draft picks other than just actually drafting a player. Be willing to use those draft picks as like a weapon to trade with another team to get what you want. You don't have to always just hold on to them. The first five picks last night were all on the defensive side of the football for the first time in over 30 years and the second time ever. What I find interesting is when you look at the draft, first five picks we went defense. First time that's happened in over 30 years. Then we went through a couple of offensive linemen. First time in 10 years that we had three offensive linemen go in the top 10. And then we got to our wide receivers. First time ever, six wide receivers were taken in the first 18 picks. And to me, those three positions, what do they all have in common? Well, we know how important quarterbacks have become. So the first 12 picks and most of the first 18 were either guys that could protect the quarterback, sack the quarterback, or catch the pass from the quarterback. It's all about passing now in the NFL, and we know that. No running backs went in the first round last night, first time in 8 years. Now you need pass catchers, pass rushers, pass protectors. Pass, pass, pass. All about passing the football. Last night we had two wide receivers traded, and again, six wide receivers go in the first 18 picks, which is a record for the NFL draft. And it's continuing this trend of wide receivers increasing their power. The three highest paid wide receivers in the NFL were all moved this offseason. They're all starting to get big money. And so in response to all of this, I thought the Chiefs and the Bills also made smart moves. They're two Super Bowl hopefuls in the AFC trying to make sure that they keep up. And so when they see these other teams either drafting wide receivers, bringing in wide receivers, right? Tyreek Hill obviously left the Chiefs. He's still in the conference. Devontae Adams comes over to the AFC. A lot of wide receivers are coming off the board. It's a very pass-happy league. What do? They trade it up in the first round to get themselves a defensive back. Try to keep up. And then when we get to superlatives, if I were to tell you my favorite draft, it would be the Jets. Three picks, I like all three on paper. Sauce Gardner and Jermaine Johnson for the defense. Garrett Wilson, a wide receiver for Zach Wilson on the offense. I like all three picks. I couldn't argue with you about, what were the Jets thinking? No, I get it. All three look like home runs may be too strong. We'll see if they all pan out. But they look like, you made good contact there at the plate. I like all three ideas. And if you're the Jets, you keep your fingers crossed that all three work out. Chances tell you they probably won't, not all three. At least one of the three probably won't work out. You usually don't get three really good guys in the same draft in the first round. But on paper, I like the thought process. I also like the Giants draft. Evan Neal and Thibodeau, right? Very talented. And you address two needs in the top seven there. I like it. The Eagles get Jordan Davis, and then they trade for A.J. Brown. I like that combination in the first round last night. The Lions get maybe the best pass rusher at number two in Hutchinson, and then because of a trade, they get maybe the best wide receiver with Williams at 12. I like the Lions draft. And even the Ravens. You get Kyle Hamilton, who's regarded as the number one safety. You draft, believed to be the number one center, and I thought they were on the right side of that trade with Marquise Brown to the Cardinals that helped them, get another pick. And they didn't get screwed over in the trade. I thought the Ravens had a pretty good night as well. The smartest team in the draft, as I said earlier, probably in the minority, but I think it is the Titans, for following through with what I've been saying, what I've been preaching on the show for weeks. If you have one of these unhappy wide receivers that wants you to break the bank, A.J. Brown ended up getting $100 million from the Eagles. Titans said, yeah, forget it. They made him an offer, reportedly $16 million a year. He ended up getting $25 from the Eagles. The Titans didn't want to go that high. So they said, all right, well, if that's the case, right, we're not going to play hardball. We'll move on from you. We'll go replace you in the draft with somebody who's younger, who's cheaper, who will have for a longer period of time. And hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, he'll be just as good. But if I were to be running an NFL team, I'm not going to let a wide receiver, bend me over. No, I'll just go back into the draft. There's talented wide receivers coming into the league every year. Ja'Marr Chase. Before that, Justin Jefferson. Before that, Deebo Samuel. The best wide receivers in the league were all just a couple years in. Most of them are not top 20 picks. You can get talented wide receivers. And if I'm the Titans, the reason why this works well for the Titans, too, is because look at the Titans. They ran the football this year more than they threw the football. I don't know how many other NFL teams could say that. They passed the football the eighth fewest times in the league. They ran it more than anybody. So you're a run-first offense, and now you have a wide receiver saying, hey, I want $25 million a year. And as good as A.J. Brown may have been so far in the league, if you're the Titans, like, well, you're not even the number one guy in our offense. We're more about the running game. So why should we invest $100 million in you? That's not worth it. We'll move you away. You didn't show up to voluntary workouts. You haven't been talking to us. You turned down our offer. Let's go get somebody who is excited to be here. Draft a rookie who's younger, who's cheaper, who we could have for a longer period of time, who hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, actually works out. We're going to be about running the football anyways. And, the Eagles, find somebody else that go pay you $100 million. A.J. Brown's on the third highest paid wide receiver in the league 3 years in. In the superlative of two on the nose, it's the Packers. Now, look, maybe the Packers couldn't do much by the time we got to them in the 20s. Six wide receivers already came off the board. But it was just so perfect. The fact that they still, once again, did not take a wide receiver after all the talk and the drama the last couple of years, and after losing Davante Adams, trading him away. It's now been 20 years, longest streak in the league, in which the Packers have not taken a wide receiver, or, for that matter, any skill position, in the first round. 20 years. And it was just too perfect last night. Two picks in the first round. You think, all right, this is the time they finally have to get a wide receiver. And it's almost like, they're continuing to throw salt in the wound of Aaron Rodgers or Packers fans or others by still not going wide receiver. I imagine they will at some point in this draft, maybe tonight. But it was just so fitting. It was perfect that in the first round, everybody expected them to finally do it, and they still didn't. Which leads me to the next superlative of the guy who's never changed, and that's Trent Baalke. And maybe this one will work for him. He did have some success. He did bring in some good pieces in San Francisco. He's the GM of the Jaguars now. But Baalke has always loved the athlete over maybe the more polished, safer pick. He likes the home run swing. And last night, that's what they did at first overall. Now, look, again, it may work out. They may have just gotten themselves the best player in the draft. It probably doesn't mean a whole lot, but a lot of these draft quote-unquote experts believe that Trayvon Walker was a real gamble. They didn't like that idea, taking him first overall. Everyone thought Hutchinson was the best talent at that spot in this draft. We'll see. But Baalke is a home run hitter. He loves his athletes, and he's going for it again. He's taking another home run swing at number one with the Jaguars. We'll see if it works out. I'm not going to say it was a bad pick or a good pick. I don't know, but I'm just saying, typical Trent Baalke, right, doing the same thing. He's never changed, and maybe that's a good thing, but he always loves his athletes. The biggest reach, of course, is Cole Strange with the Patriots at 29. That's not to say that Strange is going to be a bum and he's not going to work in the NFL, but it's about the value. Why pay double the price for something you could get for half? Right? Why spend the first-round pick on Strange when you could probably get him even in the third round? Why use your 29th pick? That's just not good value. He may be a Pro Bowler, but did you have to use your first-round pick on Strange, who on the consensus big board was like the 104th best prospect? That didn't seem like good value. But that leads me to the biggest college football winners. We could talk about winners and losers in the NFL, but we're going to have to wait on those results. In college football, we already know. We discussed it last hour. Georgia had five players drafted in the first round. Second most for a college team in one draft in the first round all time, and the most on defense. And consider this. Georgia had five players drafted last night in the first round. The ACC had four total. The Pac-12 had four. The Big 12 had zero. Bad for the Big 12. Georgia outdrafted all other conferences other than their own. That's impressive. The SEC also accounted for a third of the draft picks last night. That is also impressive. Other winners, of course, Chattanooga, because of the Cole Strange pick, and now people are actually talking about Chattanooga. Terrell Owens went there, by the way. So, you got T.O., and now you got Cole Strange. And then Ohio State, I would say, is the other winner. Because when we had that run on wide receivers and they came off the board 10, 11, 12, all three of those guys at one point, they were all in the wide receiver room together at Ohio State. And so that's a nice piece for Ohio State to say, especially on recruiting trips, to put more wide receiver talent in the NFL. And after going about a decade without a good wide receiver drafted in the NFL from Ohio State, now in the last 6 years, you had the three guys last night plus McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, Michael Thomas. So they're starting to develop wide receivers with an offensive coach like Ryan Day, and that's good for their recruiting and just for their future in general. But then also to use that and bring it back to my wide receiver conversation, Ohio State had a lot of talent at the wide receiver position the last couple of years and did not win anything with it, which I will bridge back to the Titans, that in the NFL you need more than just a talented wide receiver. Right? We've seen a lot of great wide receivers that never won anything. Calvin Johnson, even Randy Moss. We've seen a lot of great wide receivers that were not the missing link for a Super Bowl. So if I'm the NFL, just like the Titans did last night, I'm not giving big money to these guys. I'll go find somebody else instead. That's what they did last night in the draft. All in all, it was a fun first night of the draft. And it was great because of how unpredictable it was, and it became very chaotic, and I think that's good. A lot of mock drafts may have not all been that great. That's a good thing. You don't want to be able to predict the entire thing. That becomes too boring. Now, in regards to the mock draft put together here on the Morrow Midday Show. Trent did the first 16 picks, added three more on, and in the first 16 picks, outpicked Mel Kiper Jr. himself. So with that, I think it was a successful mock draft. Five of the top 16 were correct. Pretty good. And a couple of others were kind of like a half credit. Not bad. We broke it all down earlier. If you missed anything from the show, such as that breakdown, you can find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. I just saw this. Speaking of mock drafts, I just came across this. Some guy, Stephen Chia, is that his name? With Barstool, I think?
Stephen Che.
If
I'm not mistaken.
Claiming he has the best mock draft.
Oh, well, yeah, here we go. And also, I mean, Jay Glazer put something out today that he had every single pick right.
Really?
In the top 10, yeah.
Did Glazer put this out before the draft, or he's just claiming it now?
So I want to read you the tweet because I thought it was absolutely hilarious what he was claiming here. But what he said was, so yesterday afternoon, my social media team asked me to predict my top 10 an hour and a half before the draft. Here's what I wrote down on my phone. He posted this about an hour ago, and it's in the notes app, and it does say April 28th at 3:36 p.m., but this could definitely be fabricated. I mean, he didn't miss. He had all 10 picks correct.
Wow. Now, here's the thing. Let's see. When you update that, it changes to the latest time when you update it, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so because otherwise, right, you could go back and you could edit it and it'd still have the original time, but I think it sticks to the time you last updated the notes. All right, so that may be some solid evidence right there.
Jay Glazer also predicted last year that Trey Lance would go up and be taken at number 3. Glazer. And the Aaron Rodgers stuff he already had like a couple hours before it happened.
Glazer's really good. He doesn't get the same publicity as like Schefter.
No.
Glazer may be even better. He doesn't have as much stuff. Or he doesn't at least put as much stuff up. By the way, Schefter, he was not involved in the draft last night, right? Because his kid was graduating from college.
I believe so, yeah.
So, again, I didn't watch all the drafts. I don't think he was ever on the screen. But even at his kid, give it a rest. Even at your kid's graduation, he was tweeting the news about the A.J. Brown trade and everything.
Right.
It's like, your kid's graduating. You don't need to take one night off of breaking news. Nobody cares. And if anybody cares and thinking like, oh, how come Adam Schefter didn't tweet this? Well, then you need to get off Twitter. And who cares? Your son's graduating college. Why don't you just – it happens once in your lifetime. I'm tired of these news breakers that always have to get the news out for – who cares? I don't care. You had it first, Ian Rappaport. I couldn't care less. We talk about it on the show. I don't even remember where I saw it. Oh, was it Schefter or Ian Rappaport or Jay Glazer had it first? I don't know. Couldn't care less. But when it comes to that role, Jay Glazer does really well. He just may not do as much volume as a Schefter. He may not be tweeting as much. You'll see him on the Fox Sunday afternoon, and Glazer's always right on with really everything he says. So, all right, maybe he nailed the top 10. Now, this guy from Barstool, looking at this, he had the top 4 correct. He swapped 5 and 7, but he had the same players. 6 was correct. So if you just swap those two players, he had the number 9 player correct, but he had a trade. And number 10, he had incorrect. So he had almost he almost nailed the first 9 picks. And he's claiming this is the best mock draft. He also had Matt Corral going 31st, though. So that's not great.
He could fall to, like, the 4th round, I feel like.
Yeah.
With nobody taking quarterbacks, he could really fall.
And he also had Malik Willis going number 15 in this mock draft.
Also, bold move, Luke, on the players like Matt Corral who were at the draft last night. Like, there was a lot of them that just didn't get picked.
If you were a prospect, but you're not a clear-cut first round. Are you going to the draft?
No chance.
Yeah, I don't think
no
so.
Chance. There's no way. I mean, like, even guys who, like, Trevon Walker wasn't there last night, and there were some guys that were there. But, I mean, Matt Corral, hey, you could be waiting, a couple more days here,
yeah,
pal, before you get taken. And apparently he came out and said, I feel very confident in being here. It's like, well, some GM rubbed you the wrong way, pal.
Like, even you thought Aaron Rodgers was bad. He was taking, 24th overall.
Yeah.
And we, at the time, was like, oh, this is very cringeworthy watching him in the green room. And he still went in the first round. If I was not a clear-cut first-round guy, I'm not going. If there's a chance I don't go in the first round, I'm not going to sit there all night and not hear my name called. Like, okay, going to have to come back tomorrow. Plus, just the shame of being there and not getting picked. I like the idea of being at home and maybe doing my own thing or just, I'll be with my family and wait. I don't even need to put a camera on me because If I was ever in this situation, I'd probably be like a nervous wreck waiting to hear my name called. Yeah, that's a tough thing. Yeah, Corral, he's probably going to have to wait all night tonight, come back tomorrow. By the end, the whole room's going to be empty. He's going to be in there. Like, all right,
he's still waiting. Yeah. He just wants to walk on the stage.
Hopefully I get drafted soon.
Fifth round pick. You've never seen a fifth round pick walk on the stage.
Yeah. So we'll see where Corral goes. We'll see what happens with the quarterbacks now. It's interesting to have only one quarterback in the first round, and now you want to talk about value. Maybe you could get a good value play here with a Malik Willis or eventually Desmond Ridder or Matt Corral in these later rounds that could eventually turn into something for you. When we come back, we'll look at these first-round picks, and based off of history, I'll let you know who could boom, who could bust. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Of the first round last night, which one of these players could boom or bust? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show. I gave you some of the numbers earlier in case you weren't with us at the time. If you go back and you look since 2000, this is based off of which players at that position got a second contract with the team that drafted them. Based off of the numbers, the safest first-round pick is an offensive lineman. They may not boom, but they bust far less frequent than other positions. In fact, when it comes to the center position, all but one center, I believe it was, over the 17 years, drafted in the first round, signed the second contract. Doesn't mean they're great, all pros, Hall of Famers, but good enough that the team wants to keep them around. Offensive lineman is a safe bet in the first round. Based off of the contracts, linebacker is the next safest position. Then we get under 50%. Where it becomes less than a coin flip. The edge defender is would be the third category, 45%. Quarterback would be next at 42%. Running back at 40%, safety and tight end each at 39%. Cornerback and defensive tackle at 35%. Wide receiver at 27%. There was no running back in the first round. Tight end, right? Let's focus on just three positions. Not offensive line. I'm not going to get in the weeds and break down offensive linemen. But three positions of interest. Let's look at the edge rusher because the first three picks were all in that edge position. Five went in the first round. Now, the data tells us, right, 45%, let's call them half. Half of these guys will work out. So let's take the top four and pick two out of them. Well, it would be obvious which two you'd be most concerned about. And it'd be Thibodeau going to the Giants and Walker, the first overall pick, to the Jaguars. Because that is still seen, even though he's the first overall pick, that is still seen as a risk. Trayvon Walker, maybe not quite as polished, at least as Hutchinson, who went after him. And for Thibodeau, the concern are off-field interests, into media, has his own NFT, whatever, cryptocurrency, whatever he did. Now he's going to New York. And he said previously he wanted to go to a New York team. Because, of course, if you're trying to build a brand, where would you rather be than New York City? And, well, technically, in this case, New Jersey, but they are New York. Now, Michael Strahan may not have been to this extent in terms of media savvy and other interests, but Strahan, Tiki Barber, same idea. Tiki Barber used to actually work in radio during the offseason. He used to host on WFAN, and now that's what he does. Now he is a host on WFAN. But while he was playing in the offseason, his agent told him, like, hey, this would be good. You're a running back. You know, you could get injured. Why don't you start early with your media training? And he used to do it in the offseason. And, in fact, early on when Tiki had fumble issues, he thought his career would be short-lived, so he was already kind of looking at that second career. But my point in all this being that Tiki Barber and Michael Strahan, they worked out pretty well in that market despite having some of these other concerns or eyes for other things or like to do media or had a future in media, and both kind of retired. Strahan a little different. Tiki Barber was younger. I think a lot of people were surprised when Tiki retired, when he did. Strahan was a little bit older. They had just won the Super Bowl. Made a little more sense, but it was still a little surprise when Strahan retired when he did. And they both went on now to pretty good media careers. So I understand the concern there. I'll put him in the category of a bust, which may not be fair. And I'll take my chances with Aiden Hutchinson, who's the most polished, we believe, entering his rookie year. And he's going to Detroit. Right, just played at Michigan. His father played at Michigan. They're Michigan guys. He gets to stay home. He wanted to go to Detroit. The Lions wanted him. It's just it's a match made in heaven. And Jermaine Johnson was the fourth one taken in the 20s to the Jets. And I don't know. There's just something there that I like about Johnson that I think he could work out. A lot of times it's those lower drafted players you don't focus on. The first three picks are all in this category, and so we all believe those are going to be the stars. And a lot of times it's the guy later in the draft that was overlooked that exceeds expectations and surprises you. So Jermaine Johnson and Aiden Hutchinson, I'll say, are the two booms, the two that work out, and the two busts, I'll say Thibodeau and Walker at the edge rusher position. By the way, there was a fifth one to go at the very end. The Chiefs he's got a Greek name, Karlaftis. Is that how he says it?
Bingo. Oh, there you go.
Right, pretty good.
Broadcaster 101.
That's right. I know my Greek names. His name's not actually George, though, right? That's the American version, if you want. Because I thought it was interesting to have a kid who's like 20 years old named George. I feel like that's an older name. Yeah, I think it's everybody starts somewhere, but I think it's kind of funny or weird if you had a baby and you're hanging out with a baby calling him George.
Be like Susan, you know, like in today's day and age. This looks like a Susan.
Yeah, that is an old name, too. If you're named Susan, I got nothing against you. It's an older name. George feels like an older name. You ever see a little baby running around? And, hey, come here, George. It's an old name. At the quarterback position, quarterbacks in the first round, 42% of the time they get a contract, a second contract. Let's call it 50-50. Now, there was only one quarterback taken last night, so he's either going to be a hit or a miss. Kenny Pickett going 20th to the Steelers. I think Pickett will work out enough. I don't think he has a high ceiling. I don't think he's a Ben Roethlisberger. I don't think he's going to be some sort of top quarterback in the league. But for the Steelers, when you look at Pittsburgh, I mean, their plan was Mitchell Trubisky. And I think Pickett could be in that similar camp where he's going to be one of those guys. I think he's going to be in the league for a while. He may bounce around a little bit. You know, his ceiling could be something similar to like a Tannehill or a Kirk Cousins where he'll keep you afloat. He's not going to go win a Super Bowl for you. He's not going to put the team on his back, but it'll be good enough that he gets opportunities. He's not going to embarrass you. And especially in Pittsburgh, you know, they're always about their defense, especially with Mike Tomlin. They're about their defense. They got Najee Harris. You know, they're about that running game. Ben Roethlisberger led them to the playoffs when he was half a shell of himself these last couple years. So you don't have to try to do too much. So I think Pickett will have some success in Pittsburgh. I think he'll be okay. I guess we could say he's going to be more, in that sense, I'll call him more of a boom than a bust. But maybe like a Mac Jones, right? Mac Jones could be good for the Patriots, get him into the playoffs, but he's not going to be putting up 30 touchdown seasons and wowing you. It's going to be more like a game manager. And then when we get to the wide receiver position, this one's tough. The data tells us that the wide receiver position, 27% work out in the first round. Let's round that up to 33%. Let's say a third. Six wide receivers went in the first round last night. So let's say a third of them work out. That'd be two out of six. This is very difficult to try to choose. If I had to pick my two favorite wide receivers that I would guess have the best careers, I think I'm going to buy into the hype, if you will. I'll say Jameson Williams with the Lions, once healthy. He's regarded as the best, when healthy, wide receiver in this class. And then I think I'll go Chris Olave out of Ohio State at New Orleans. I think the Saints, I know Sean Payton and Drew Brees are no longer there. I don't know. I just feel like that's a better location than his teammate Garrett Wilson going to the Jets with Zach Wilson. I trust the Saints long-term more to develop their wide receiver, kind of like Michael Thomas. And again, I know Sean Payton's not there. And I also like Olave, and I like him a little bit more. And he's got good speed. He can separate. He's considered one of the more polished route runners. So I'll trust Olave. Olave and Williams will be my two wide receivers that I think do hit out of the six. I don't say it with a lot of confidence, but if I had to choose two, I think I would choose those two. The other wide receivers, I can see a little bit more of a concern. Garrett Wilson, like I said, I don't know. The Jets, do I trust New York to develop him and turn him into a top-end wide receiver? For London, the concern, of course, is lack of speed. He's got a good body. I don't know about the speed. Jahan Dotson, the concern for him would be his size. He's only 5'11". You know, these smaller wide receivers, you get beat up in the NFL. And Treylon Burks, he's going to the Titans. You have the pressure immediately of having to replace A.J. Brown. Burks may not be the most popular Titan this year amongst his own fan base, and no fault of his own. But people are going to see him as, this is why we got rid of A.J. But for this guy? And as a Vikings fan, I remember when they got rid of Randy Moss and brought in Troy Williamson, and you thought, this is who they were replacing Moss with? And Williamson was terrible. But also, Burks, in that offense, you got Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback, and you have an offense that ran it more than anybody. So I just think it's tough for a wide receiver to have, A.J. Brown the exception, I guess, a wide receiver to have a big-time career in Tennessee. So if I had to pick two of six wide receivers that will actually work out, I'll keep my fingers crossed with Williams and Olave. Let's remember all this and check back in about 4 years and see if I'm correct. But those are the guys I would guess would be the booms and the busts based off of the data at these positions in the first round. Coming up, the second round of the NBA playoffs begin this weekend, and I think a lot of legacies are on the line, and I'll explain. It's the Maurer Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Maurer Midday Show.
Coming up, legacies on the line in an interesting second round of the NBA playoffs. Get to that on the Maurer Midday Show with Luke Maurer on ESPN Radio. This band was just in town this past weekend as part of that festival I've referenced.
They were?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was a good lineup.
Why didn't we hear anything about
this? I have no idea. I didn't know what was going on until it was already going on.
First heard that song in an Apple commercial, and I mean, I've been listening to them for a while.
Hey, that's what I say. Whenever you hear songs in movies or commercials, they always sound even better for some reason. And then a lot of times I'll hear a song in a movie or a commercial, I'll go look it up, and then I'll hear the full song, and I'll think, oh, actually, it's not as good as I thought it was.
Yeah, that 30 seconds was a banger. Yeah, then yes. Everything else was like, eh, all right.
Exactly.
The chorus is fire.
They know what they're doing when they pick out that perfect portion for the commercial. Yeah, the High Water Music Festival. Jack White and My Morning Jacket were the two, like, headliners. And I like My Morning Jacket. Jack White's okay. You also had Modest Mouse, Black Pumas, that group there. Camp, which is a good band. Old Crow Medicine Show, which they did their own version of Wagon Wheel. Mavis Staples, who was fantastic from the Staples Singers. Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, that's a good band. Bahamas, that's a single guy. He goes. That's a stage name. Bahamas, he's good. I like him. And a bunch of other people I'm not familiar with. Oh, Local Natives. I think I know them. That's a good group. Anyways, good festival this past weekend. I had no idea. In North Charleston. The NBA playoffs, round two begins on Sunday. We finish up round one most likely tonight. Let me not get ahead of myself. It's game six. Memphis and Minnesota tonight. They may need a seventh game, but otherwise the second round, it begins Sunday with Milwaukee and Boston. I think we have a lot of interesting second round matchups here in the NBA playoffs. Let's assume Memphis wins that game. Even if they don't, either way, it provides, whoever wins that series still provides the same thing in the next round. But looking at these matchups, you know, this time of year, legacies become a big talking point. You can really affect your legacy. And so if I look at these matchups, you have Miami and Philly in the East. Well, Miami's the one seed, and Jimmy Butler is still trying to get over the playoff hump, and they got close in the bubble 2 years ago. So they have a chance to go win, a championship of first for a lot of those guys. Philadelphia on the other side, we know their story. Always come up short, Doc Rivers, James Harden, Joel Embiid. They won this first round against Toronto, but this is now going to be a huge test, a big step up in class against Miami. And more specifically, Joel Embiid's never been past the second round. This is as far as Embiid has ever gotten. He's now 28 years old. I've shared the numbers before, right? But when Shaq was 28, he had multiple championships. Dwight Howard at least got to a championship when he was 28. So Embiid, let's see if he can even get past the second round for the first time. If not, it'd still be a disappointment for Philadelphia, even if they lose to the number one seed. You bring in Doc Rivers, you bring in James Harden, you still have Embiid there, you still can't get past the second round. That's not good enough. You have Milwaukee against Boston, which is a fascinating series. For Boston, Jason Tatum. Look, I think for all the love Tatum has gotten, and rightfully so, if you lose in this round, I think you kind of forget that first round. I think years from now you don't look back and say, yeah, but remember what they did against Brooklyn? Okay, and then they lost in six games to Milwaukee in the second round. So what good was it? So for Tatum and Boston to continue this miraculous run, if you will, over the past couple of months, I think it has to continue this series with Milwaukee. On the other side, for the Bucks, this is a big series for Giannis. Chris Middleton's unavailable. Now, Giannis just got his championship last year, but this is like his LeBron, Cleveland, Cavs type of moment. Can you put the team on your back and lead the Bucks without your Robin, Chris Middleton? He's already got the championship, but this is the next step now for Giannis. Can you carry a team through the East? I don't think Milwaukee gets past Boston, especially without Chris Middleton, but I'm curious to see how it goes down. And if Middleton, right, the Celtics are coming in playing great basketball, just swept Brooklyn. If the Bucks win on the back of Giannis, it only increases his status in the NBA. Championship last year, carries the team through the East this year. That'd be big time. In the West, you have Phoenix against Dallas. For Phoenix, of course, the story is Chris Paul. Can Chris Paul finally get that championship? He was 14 for 14 last night, didn't miss a shot, and eliminated the Pelicans. They're the number one seed. Booker is now back. You get the number four seed, Dallas. You got to win this series. Got to get back to the championship. Can Chris Paul finally get it done? For Dallas, the four seed, this is the first time Luka finally got out of the first round. And you know what? He didn't even play in half the wins, so maybe you don't give him all the credit. Jalen Brunson deserves a lot of credit. Well, you're in the second round now for the first time. What can you do here? And it's against the number one seed, Phoenix. I think this is a really fun series. With the way, I mean, you get the guard play you have in this series and the way Dallas plays offense, and Phoenix can certainly keep up with them, that could be really fun. I don't know how many games Dallas is going to win, but I think all the games will be really interesting. You know, maybe it's a 5-6 game series. I don't know, but each game will be a lot of fun to watch. And then you have Golden State and the winner of Memphis-Minnesota. Now, whoever comes out of that series, Memphis-Minnesota, they're the two youngest teams in the league, so that's probably the big story. Anthony Edwards, as a young guy, can really cement himself as a star in this league if they beat Memphis and then go and beat Golden State. Absolutely. Are you kidding? Even Karl-Anthony Towns could elevate his stock as being a bit underwhelming in the NBA. Kind of soft. If you win the first round, you go up against Golden State, win there, that does a lot for you. On the flip side for Memphis, in terms of what Memphis can accomplish here this series or this postseason, well, you're a two seed, you're really young, you know, you beat Golden State, that's a big feather in your cap. But specifically, it'd be about Ja Morant. If Memphis holds on in Game 6 tonight, it's his first playoff series victory in the NBA. And then if you go and you beat Steph Curry, and as the two seed, you actually get to the conference finals like you're supposed to, that's big for Ja Morant in just his third year in the league. And lastly, for Golden State, their opponent in that series, for Golden State, this is Steph Curry's opportunity. I know he's got all the championships, he's got all his three-pointers, he's got all the respect, but if you go and win a championship with this team, and you could go back and before Kevin Durant arrived, they won the championship without Durant and say, you know, like, oh, on paper, that team. But they were younger. You had Klay Thompson, you had Steph Curry, you had Draymond Green, certainly in their primes. That's not so much the case now. And now you throw in Jordan Poole, but if you win now, you come back for a second go-round if you're the Warriors. You win when these guys are all a little bit older, certainly more beat up. Obviously, Durant's gone. What more could you say about Steph Curry at that point? Because the idea is, you know, like, oh, he's not as good as Durant or not as good as LeBron. He's just a three-point shooter. He does this or that. He's also a good passer, good dribbler, a lot of other things. But still, it's about the threes. And then you say, you know, well, he's always been on these great teams. This would be the worst team he's won a championship with. And that would be another big check on the resume for Steph Curry, and along with that, it'd also be a big knock on Durant. For Durant to lose in the first round and get swept with Kyrie Irving, and then Steph Curry to win another championship after Durant leaves, you know, to do it without Durant, to do it when they're all a little bit older and a little more beat up, and do it as a three seed in the West, that would be even more impressive for Curry. So as the second round of the playoffs begin this weekend, I think we have some really interesting matchups in the NBA, and I think some really interesting storylines. You can make a case, as I just did, for every team that there's a player or somebody on the team or a coach that has a lot on the line that this time of year it's about changing those legacies. You win a series like this, you go win a championship, it changes how we think, talk, look at you. And that, you know, you got Chris Paul still trying to win. Steph Curry trying to do it with this unit he's playing with. Embiid and Luka just trying to go further than they ever have before. Same with Ja Morant. Can Giannis carry a team to a championship now after winning last year? Can Jason Tatum continue this great run? Should be some fun matchups in round two of the playoffs, which begin here this weekend. By the way, now that the first round has played out, as we look back, as fun of a first round as it was, there were no upsets, right? If Memphis wins tonight, the higher seed has won all of the matchups. And yet they were still intriguing series. So that's at least positive. But the favorites all came out on top. We'll wrap up your Friday when we come back. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up your Friday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcast is also available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and find the podcast there. You can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world right there through our app, ESPN Charleston, in the App Store. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 12 different states and multiple countries on, nonetheless, a Football Friday here in the offseason because of the NFL draft last night. Day two of the draft tonight. What I'm looking forward to the most, probably the quarterbacks now at this point. What do we get tonight? Where does Malik Willis go? What about these other guys? How soon does Desmond Ridder and Matt Corral come off the board? Is Corral going to have to sit in that green room all weekend? I think for these next couple of rounds, that's what I'll be curious to see. And also, just for the sake of the storyline, will the Packers get a wide receiver tonight or tomorrow or at any point? I'll keep an eye on that too. Whatever happens, we'll break it all down come Monday. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.